Hearty greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Thanks for tuning in this evening. Welcome to the sunny side of sports.
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the sunny side of sports.
Yes, my friend.
The sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports.
The sunny side of sports show.
Great show, bro. This is sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America!
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Let's kick off in Switzerland, where the draw was held Monday for the round of 16 in the UEFA Champions League, widely regarded as the world's top club football competition. And there are certainly some interesting matchups. Defending champion Real Madrid of Spain will play Paris Saint-Germain, which is currently leading the French league. Barcelona, currently in first place in Spain's La Liga, 8 points ahead of Real, is matched against Chelsea. Manchester City, off to a record-breaking start in the English Premier League, will meet the Swiss club Basel. Chelsea and Man City are two of a record 5 English clubs in the last 16 of this competition. Tottenham Hotspur will take on Juventus of Italy. Liverpool will play Porto of Portugal. And Manchester United will meet Sevilla of Spain. And in two more round of 16 matchups, Shakhtar Donetsk of Ukraine will play Roma of Italy, and 5-time European champion Bayern Munich of Germany will take on Turkey's Besiktas. Now, all of these matchups are over two legs. The first legs will be played on February 13th, 14th, 20th, and 21st. And the second legs will be contested on March 6th, 7th, 13th, and 14th. Now let's go to Kenya, where the field is set for the semifinals at the 39th CECAFA Senior Challenge Cup football tournament. In the first semifinal Thursday, Kenya will host Burundi. And in the second semifinal Friday, Zanzibar will play defending champion Uganda. The host team, the Harambee Stars of Kenya, finished on top of Group A Monday with a 1-0 victory over the Taifa Stars of Tanzania. The Kenyans finished group play with 8 points from 4 matches, 1 point ahead of Zanzibar, which lost to Libya Monday 1-0. In another result Monday, Burundi and South Sudan played to a scoreless draw. Burundi and Uganda finished on top of Group B with 5 points each from 3 matches, but the Cranes of Uganda had a better goal difference, a +4 compared with a +3 for the Swallows of Burundi. So the Ugandans finished first in the table. Now let's go to Canada, where Toronto FC has wrapped up one of the best seasons in Major League Soccer history by lifting the MLS Cup. Toronto topped the visiting Seattle Sounders over the weekend 2-0 to avenge last season's heartbreaking penalty kick loss to the Sounders in the MLS Cup final. It was the third major trophy Toronto lifted this year. Toronto also won the MLS Supporters Shield, given to the team with the best regular season record, and Toronto won the Canadian Championship. In the 2017 MLS Cup final, Josie Altidore scored Toronto's first goal in the 67th minute, and Victor Vasquez sealed the championship with a goal deep in extra time. Toronto's team captain, Michael Bradley, says the club is dedicating the cup to its passionate fans.
This was for them. You know, for the last year, our dream, our obsession was to get back, to give ourselves another another chance in front of them to lift this trophy. And so let's enjoy it and let's celebrate it all together.
Meanwhile, Toronto's Greg Vanney, the 2017 Major League Soccer Coach of the Year, also gave credit to Toronto's fans.
We're so proud to be able to do this in front of our fans. They've been behind this club for a long time through the good times and the bad times. In the last few years, we've just kept building and building and building, and it culminates tonight. And again, we're so proud to be able to lift a trophy for them and with them, and we look forward to many more to come. And I just want to thank them for being here and being behind us.
On a chilly night in Toronto, Coach Greg Vanney and his players gathered on a podium to lift the MLS Cup as confetti streamed down around them and loudspeakers blared Queen's "We Are the Champions." I'm VOA Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Joining us now from Abuja with a package of African sports news is reporter Samson Omale. And Samson says he'll be kicking off with the World Cup bound Super Eagles of Nigeria. Good evening, Samson.
Good evening to you, Sonny. Nigeria's Super Eagles are set to face Poland in a pre-World Cup friendly. Technical advisor Gernot Rohr told the French publication Football 365 that the match is scheduled for March 23 and will serve as a tune-up match for Nigeria's World Cup opener against Croatia. The German tactician believes facing Poland is an ideal preparation for the Croats because of their similar playing styles. Kenya's Dickson Kipsangtuay and Rama Tusa of Ethiopia claimed victories at the Guangzhou Marathon and IAAF Silver Label Road Race in the southern Chinese city on Sunday. In the female category, the 24-year-old Rama Tusa continued her flying form this season. She built up a comfortable lead after midway and trimmed more than 2 minutes from her personal best to wrap up the third marathon title of her career in 2 hours, 25 minutes, 12 seconds. The men's race was won by Kipsangtuay, who rallied up to upset Ethiopia's pre-race favorite Marcus Ginetti in the final 200 meters. His winning mark of 2 hours, 10 minutes, 3 seconds was just 2 seconds shy of the 2 hours, 10 minutes, 1 second course record set 2 years ago by Morocco's Abdullah Tekharafet. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria.
Thanks, Samson. Samson mentioned that friendly World Cup warm-up match between Nigeria and Poland on March 23rd. While the Nigerians are tuning up for their World Cup opener against Croatia, I'm sure Poland will be using the friendly to prepare for its first World Cup match against African opponent Senegal. And our Voice of America World Cup fans should mark their calendars. The opening match of the 2018 World Cup football tournament will take place June 14th when Russia will host Saudi Arabia in Moscow. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Just ahead, Darren Taylor has a sporty feature on a game attracting women from townships around Johannesburg, South Africa. So please, keep on the sunny side.
Oh, keep on the sunny side. Always on the sunny side. Keep on the sunny side of life. It will help you every day. It will brighten all the way. If you keep on the sunny side of life. Oh, keep on the sunny side.
South Africa's most popular sports, namely soccer, rugby, and cricket, have had women's teams competing internationally for a long time. But now there's a new unexpected game, attracting women from townships around the country's biggest city, Johannesburg, Ireland's national sport, Gaelic football. It's often described as a mixture of rugby and soccer. In this encore Sunnyside of Sports presentation, let's listen in again to this feature by Darren Taylor.
Kick it in. It's going to drop a little short, but it's dangerously in there. And a goal!
South Africa's Gaelic footballers study the game by watching TV footage of big matches in Ireland. Competitors use their hands and feet to pass the round ball in the air or on the ground to teammates to get close to the opponent's H-shaped posts. Two teams of 15 players each try to score the most points by kicking the ball into the goal net, soccer style, or over the poles, like in rugby.
Yeah, in Ireland, I guess it's a very historical game. It goes back through the centuries, and people take great pride in the local teams. Then on top of that, it's quite an exciting game. It's a running game, high scoring. It's got some
Keith O'Leary, a power plant developer, also coaches South Africa's national Gaelic football team, the SA Gaels. He's supported by fellow Irish expat, computer technologist and team chairman, David Devine.
Gaelic football globally has been Irish expats emigrating, bringing the game with them, having a kick around on a Friday night and going to the pub afterwards. That's been the tradition over the last couple of decades.
But now, Irish men like him and optician and team promoter Derek McCarthy are attracting South Africans to the sport.
We want the locals playing it. We want them absorbing the Irish culture and absorbing the love for the game, which they have been doing. And we started from such a small base, but it is really growing legs, and social media is just a great place to do that.
Hey, go, 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 go.
A trainer drills the SA Gaels at a recent practice.
When the people who come to play for the first, second, third training session realise how easy it is for them to learn the skills, they then start promoting the game on our behalf. They go to their friends, who go to their friends, who go to their friends, and it becomes a bigger circle.
My background, I play soccer, but
Tabiso Pakedi is part of that circle. He explains that Gaelic football is very fast and the training's tough. Pakedi says the different skills demanded by Gaelic football, like dribbling, hitting the ball and jumping high in the air to grab it, are what persuaded him to play it.
It's physical and handball, kicking, most kicking points, that's the most thing that I love, especially to make the team to win.
The athletic man in his mid-20s captains the SA Gaels. Coach O'Leary says it's difficult for them at this point as there's no Gaelic Football League in South Africa. So the squad trains in Johannesburg and plays proper matches in the Middle East, where Irish expats have entrenched the sport. The Gaels also visit Ireland as often as possible to learn from the masters. Pakedi recalls his first visit to the Emerald Isle.
Actually, I didn't know what to expect. The situation that we had there, it was the weather. The weather wasn't too good for us as we used to hot condition here.
But Irish coaches are surprised at the high-tempo game played by the South Africans, even on Ireland's storm-lashed, waterlogged, muddy fields.
They did themselves justice for a community to come so far and partake in the game in the conditions that were in it. It was really, really admirable.
A great thing to see. I never thought I'd see a South African team playing on that pitch.
On the Gaels' visits to Ireland, O'Leary says eyes are on them before they touch a ball. He says the Irish are amazed to see black Africans in yellow, red, green and blue jerseys attempting their national sport.
The Irish are very attracted to the team because of the colour and the noise that they bring.
In Ireland, the South Africans pull off the odd victory, but usually lose. Yet even so, they celebrate because they always go down fighting. Devine says for people so new to Gaelic football, they're extremely talented.
I think the players now that we have are some of the best ambassadors that South Africa has from a sporting perspective that travel the world. promoting the game from a South African perspective and just spreading the word to show that they're well capable of taking on some of the best international teams in the world and some of the best club teams at home in Ireland.
Smiling, Parkady describes his vision of the future of Gaelic football in his country as modest.
Hopefully to see most of South Africans go to Ireland and compete against Irish and then to be the best, as if they are the one who've been playing the game before than the Irish.
Being virtually invisible in soccer-mad South Africa isn't dampening the enthusiasm of players like Parkady. Instead, it's inspiring them to spread Gaelic football across the country and continent. For the Sunny Side of Sports, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
Thanks, Darren. In National Basketball Association news, let's give a Sunny Side of Sports salute to Victor Oladipo of the Indiana Pacers, who scored a career-high 47 points Sunday to help pace the Pacers to a 126-116 overtime victory over the visiting Denver Nuggets. Oladipo's mother is Nigerian, and his father is from Sierra Leone. Victor added 7 rebounds and 6 assists in a memorable game for sure. Oladipo played his college basketball at the University of Indiana, and he says playing now as a professional in front of Indiana fans is, in his words, pretty awesome. Joining us once again on the show is Andrew Palcheski, the Voice of America's social media reporter. Sporty greetings, Andrew.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. Good to be here with you.
Welcome back, Andrew. What's trending on this Monday?
Well, Sonny, the 2018 Major League Baseball season is still months away, and I know a lot of fans are eagerly anticipating that date circled on the calendar in February when pitchers and catchers report for spring training. That's kind of the first mark that the baseball season's approaching. But even months before that, everyone is buzzing about 2 big names in Major League Baseball. First, the big sweepstakes for Japanese player Shohei Ohtani. Ohtani has only played in Japan, but during his career there, he has been a standout both as a pitcher and as a hitter. Very unusual. You're usually in baseball, you're either
one or the other.
Not often that you see someone who can do both and do both very well. He could devote himself to either one of those roles and be a standout player, but he's able to do both. So he's naturally being coveted by Major League Baseball teams ever since he announced that he would move from Japan to the MLB. Teams have been trying to woo him, and fans have been anticipating on social media where he might end up. There's a lot of speculation about that he might want to go to a major market team or that he might want to go somewhere on the west coast of the United States so that he'd be closer to Japan. And those two assumptions ended up being true because this past week, the anticipation came to an end. Ohtani announced that he would join the Los Angeles Angels baseball team.
The Angels?
Yes.
Okay.
Right. The team introduced him live. It was broadcast on social media over the weekend. Ohtani said he wanted to wear number 27, but it was taken by the Angels star center fielder Mike Trout, who was the winner of the 2016 American League Most Valuable Player Award. So Angel fans, needless to say, are thrilled. Between Ohtani and Trout, they're hoping that this brings the team back to the pinnacle of the sport where they once were. About 15 years ago was the last time they won the World Series in 2002. Kind of floundered in recent years, but they're hoping to get back to that spot. But the Angels getting Ohtani means that there are 29 other Major League Baseball teams that did not get him. And so there are a lot of fans on social media upset that they did not land the Japanese phenom. And they're saying that Ohtani will be irrelevant because the Angels aren't a good team. So maybe a bit of sour grapes there, I think, that you know, people aren't too happy that they weren't able to land him. The other big name, of course, this week was Giancarlo Stanton, who already plays in Major League Baseball. He was named the 2017 National League Most Valuable Player, playing right field for the Miami Marlins. Miami, however, has not had a winning record since 2009, so when Stanton became a free agent this offseason, he decided to look for a new team. And similar to Shohei Ohtani, Giancarlo Stanton's search kicked off a lot of speculation on social media, a lot of reported teams that he might end up with, but word coming down late last week that Stanton has picked baseball's winningest franchise, the 27-time world champion New York Yankees.
The Bronx Bombers.
The Bronx Bombers. you know, Yankees are a team that's used to winning. They have not won a World Series since 2009. A lot of teams would be thrilled that they have won a World Series so recently, but for a team that is used to winning like the Yankees, that's just not good enough. So they were trying to build up their team, and they're going to do that with Giancarlo Stanton. And Sonny, if there were sour grapes on social media for Shohei Ohtani going to the Angels, it was a whole vineyard for Giancarlo Stanton. The Yankees are one of those franchises that, let's just say, they're not loved by a lot of fans. So a lot of fans on social media not happy that he picked that team. He's expected to be introduced later today at a press conference this afternoon in Florida to introduce him as the newest member of the Yankees. But a lot of conversation about these two guys saying that they are going to change things in baseball. They are going to create a whole new dynamic going into the 2018 season.
Andrew, regarding Ohtani, I know there is speculation now. Will he both pitch and perhaps be a designated hitter for the Angels? And I think I read the last player to pitch at least 15 games in a regular season and also be a position player for at least 15 games. We have to go all the way back to Babe Ruth.
Wow.
Back in 1919. So we're talking about 100 years.
One of the greats of the game, if not the greatest. And it is very rare. And I think that is to play as a pitcher and as a position player. And I think that's part of the reason why he picked the Angels in the American League, because that's one of the quirks of Major League Baseball. In the American League, they have a designated hitter instead of the pitcher hitting. So he can maybe do both of those roles, even on days when he's not pitching, he can get into the lineup, as opposed to the National League, where if you're pitching, you're hitting that same day, but you can't necessarily hit on a different day unless you're out in the field. So that might be one of the reasons why he chose an American League team like the Angels as well.
What else is trending on this Monday, Andrew?
Well, 2017 has been an amazing year for Serena Williams. Of course, she won her 23rd Grand Slam title. She got married. She gave birth to her first child. So what do you get for somebody who's so accomplished and seems to have it all? How about a 1 million square foot building? Yes, because Nike is expanding its headquarters in the U.S. state of Oregon, where they're located, and they've announced that they're naming their newest and largest building on the Nike campus after Serena Williams. She's been a Nike athlete for nearly 15 years, and she writes on social media that she's honored and grateful that Nike is naming the building after her. In addition to that building, they're also naming two other structures after sports legends. A new fitness center will be named after Mike Krzyzewski, who's been coach of the Duke University men's basketball team for 37 years, over 1,000 wins with that team. So he's had quite a record, five-time NCAA Division I champions. And another building is going to be named after Sebastian Coe, the two-time Olympic gold medalist and the president of the IAAF. So congratulations to those three getting buildings named after them on the Nike campus. Very cool.
Andrew, I know you follow tennis closely. What's your sense? Do you think Serena will be playing down under next month at the Australian Open?
You know, that's still the hope for a lot of people on social media. They want to see Serena back there. As we talked about last week, they want to not just see her back there, but see her get her 24th title, which would put her right up there with Margaret Court. Of course, Margaret Court didn't play in the Open era, so that's why she has 24, and Serena has the record at 23 for the Open era. But Serena, I think she wants the overall record, and I think she's going to try to do that. It'd be interesting if she could do it in Australia, because Margaret Court, of course, is Australian. But I have a suspicion that she's going to do everything in her power to try to get down there and play, and I would not count her out. Even though this is her first tournament in maybe 8 or 9 months, and the first since she's given birth, she is always a threat. And I think she'll be ranked pretty highly, too. I think she'll still be in the top 30, even though she hasn't played. So she'll have hopefully a pretty good seeding as well. But all eyes in Melbourne come January. We'll see what happens.
Andrew Palcheski, the VOA social media reporter. Thank you, Andrew.
Thanks, Sonny.
And that wraps up the December 11th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer Dan Crafton. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
I get it.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Governments that sponsor or condone violence or discrimination against their own people are more likely to see extremism grow in their country. If left unchecked, human rights violations and abuses and poor governance spawn radicalized individuals and communities that can escalate into threats to international peace and security, said Undersecretary of State for Public Diplomacy and Public Affairs Steve Goldstein. It's very clear in countries where human rights abuses occur, there's a greater growth of terrorism, said Undersecretary Goldstein. Preventing violent extremism is core to the work of the Trump administration. The tools of democracy are a critical component to how we confront terrorism. President Donald Trump's administration is exploring opportunities to build tolerance and accountability, to counter violent extremism, and bring new voices to conversations about inclusive governance. We work daily to try to address human rights issues around the world, said Undersecretary Goldstein. The Secretary and other members of the administration bring issues of human rights up with foreign leaders when they travel. We try to make the point that ensuring democracy is vital and that we have a responsibility to our citizens and that these world leaders have responsibility to their citizens to provide an environment where human rights can grow and prosper. The United States will continue to advance human rights through bilateral and multilateral engagement, public diplomacy, and supporting human rights defenders and civil society organizations.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. If you have a comment, please write to Editorials, VOA, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. You may also comment and view all our current editorials at the VOA Editorials homepage, www.voanews.com/editorials.
Africa, I'm James Butte, host of VOA's Daybreak Africa. When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you the news as it happens. Listen to Daybreak Africa Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC. And our 5-minute newscast come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
VOA Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information. VOA.
We are always glad to have our listeners throughout Africa tuning in to our newscasts, covering African news. Tune in on top of each hour, 24/7. VOA is your trusted source of news and information.